Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to Nightlight, everybody. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. We really do appreciate it. You give us an opportunity to present to you on our platform interesting and intriguing, thought-provoking, and educational topics, and you enable us to grow right along with you. So it is an amazing thrill and an honor that you share your time with us. I want to thank first, before we go further, Ken Quiet Hawk for his amazing intro. You can find Ken and his wife Deb on the internet. Look them up. They are amazing representatives of Native storytellers, and their work is profound, and they have done an amazing job at preserving an amazing tradition that has been around for generations. So, we have Mary Joyce here tonight. She is the editor of Spaceships Over Cashier's website. She joins us to delve into a deep subject. We'll be speaking about the evidence of deep space UFOs that she has gathered for her website. She'll be showing NASA photos of humongous UFOs that are bigger than Jupiter. And thanks to the sophisticated computer technology, her photos reveal details way beyond the burly images NASA makes available to the public. So I'm so glad you're joining us for an interesting and absorbing topic. You can find her photographs on the scroll at the top of the page if you're listening on Blog Talk. And after the show, we will be on YouTube, and the pictures will be scrolling there as well. Mary has worked for two major metropolitan newspapers, the Orlando Sentinel in Florida, and as an artist and columnist, and the Oakland Press in Michigan as a Sunday magazine editor and then feature editor. On the side, she's written magazine articles and books, and since 2008, she has been the main researcher and editor for Skyships Over Cashier's website, which features a wide variety of cutting-edge topics, from UFOs to secret underground bases, from Bigfoot to Cherokee Little People. Mary has gone from investigating mob stories in Detroit, including Jimmy Hoffa's death, to interviewing people with the highest top secret clearances about clandestine government activities. She even has had face-to-face interviews with a whistleblower from Cosmic Top Secret Clearance, who once worked with the top tier of the infamous International Cabal. Because of her website and books, she's been a frequent guest on radio and TV shows in the USA, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia. You can find her website at www.spaceshipsovercashiers.com. And I do recommend you check it out. It is a phenomenal website. It has archives that go back a decade or so. And her material is fascinating, well presented, and gives you, well, it titillates you in many ways to search further and grow. So please check it out, you know, after the show, of course, but do check it out. It's an amazing website. Welcome to the show, Mary. Glad you're here.
Hi, hope you're having a good evening. Are you in solitary confinement?
Yes, I am, but the cool thing is, because of what I do, I can, you know, I can be in solitary confinement anywhere. And to be honest with you, it hasn't changed my life too much, except I don't go out for groceries as often as I used to. Aside from that, I'm very well secure here in the house with the two cats, and they have been sheltering with me. So it's been an unusual time. To tell you the truth, don't remember anything like this ever before, but it does add spice to life for sure. And, you know, you do begin to wonder. I did the other day Google just how many people have passed away from the regular flu and then from this particular, the COVID-19, and actually regular flu has much bigger numbers. So it's terrifying and confusing all at the same time.
At the same time, this, if it gets out of control, will be worse than any flu we've ever had. And it's so contagious. It's much more contagious than regular flu. And so the precautions that, you know, they're giving people are really those that should be followed, though I have a whole lot of sympathy for anyone who's confined to a small apartment in a big city, because then they are really trapped. And those of us like you and like me who have we're basically more out in the country than people directly in the city, so we can get out and do some things and not put anybody in jeopardy. So tonight my sympathy goes out to any of your listeners who might be confined in a small space.
Yeah, mine as well. I don't feel restricted in any way, shape, or form, and so although I'm 76 and I am in that at-risk place, so I am a little paranoid about, you know, making sure I have, if anyone else is around, that we have plenty of room between us, and I haven't actually been around anyone else, so I'm good to go for another month, and then I'm going to have to go out and get some food.
Gotcha. Well, we'll try to get people's minds off of this topic, because everywhere you turn, that's what we're hearing about. And to give your listeners a little bit of behind the scenes, you and I were talking earlier, several days ago, about my presentation that I gave at the Alien Expo convention in Knoxville about 2 weeks ago. And the name of the presentation was Deep Space UFO Photos. So you and I kind of put our heads together and I sent you some of the photos that are in that presentation, so that, you know, anybody who has the ability to see the constantly scrolling pictures that you have, I don't know if it's up all the time or just when you go to YouTube, or how is that going to work, by the way?
If they are listening on Blog Talk, which is how they'll have to be listening now, it is scrolling across the top of the screen constantly while the show is on.
Okay.
And when it goes up on YouTube, I will space them so that every 6 minutes a picture changes, so that anybody who is listening on a device that has capability of seeing pictures, they can see it.
And the reason that I even put this presentation together is because human beings are now able to make rather sophisticated UFOs. And so many of the UFOs that we see flying around are actually man-made. And so it's getting harder and harder to tell the difference between the authentic ones that are coming from deep space or coming from deep beneath the earth, and those that our military industrial people have made. And these are, what I put in this show are pictures of UFOs that are humongous. They're bigger. They are so big, they are bigger than Jupiter, which is our largest planet. And if people don't know their astronomy, 1,300 Earths could fit inside of Jupiter. So when we say these satellites are big, we mean they are really, really big. And there's just no doubt that some other intelligence created these, that human beings could not have done these. Now, the way it works is there is a satellite system. It's NASA SOHO satellites that circle or are photographing the moon, the sun all the time. And there's one on each side of the sun. Each one of these satellite cameras takes a picture of the sun every 12 minutes. And those are available so that anybody can actually tap into them and see them for themselves. Well, the pictures will show some of these things, but they don't show them in any detail whatsoever. And we were really, really fortunate. Back in 2013, we were contacted by a man. His first name is Mart. His last name is Padmos. And he is one of those technical computer geniuses. And he would take these original NASA photos and he would eliminate the debris and the interference and zoom in on these things. And, my God, he really got incredible detail. The thing that struck me was that these satellites are so diverse in their shapes. They just don't all look the same. There's one that looks like a silver cross, and then it has this like jagged line that goes out quite a distance from it. And when he zeroed in on it, you can see the mechanical structure that begins to look like, slick moving machinery that's made out of steel and shiny. And so he zoomed in on that at several different places. And again, the smooth steel, shiny look is just incredible, and you can see quite a bit of detail. There's another one, and it just looks like a blip going across the original photo, but when he zeroed in on it, it kind of looks like if you can imagine a flute that will slide into itself and then pull out in different sections, almost like those camper cups from, when we were in Scouts. And,
yes, I do remember that.
And they would sometimes collapse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, it kind of looks like it could have been pulled out that way, and then it's been enlarged again, so you can see this incredible mechanical detail. Those two shapes are two UFOs are entirely different. Then there's another one that perhaps looks a little bit more like what we humans could imagine, and it's like a tower-shaped rocket. It has a base and it has a vertical part that perhaps looks a little bit like one of our, things ready to launch from the NASA Space Center. There's another one that kind of looks like a long, skinny skeleton key. And, you just don't expect these to look so different. There's another one that for some reason comes out in kind of a turquoise color, and it's sort of like a cross at an angle, like instead of being vertical, one of the lines goes at an odd angle. And again, it's not a shape you would ever expect. There is one which is kind of maybe like somebody might expect, and it looks like what I call a phoenix. It's doubly interesting because at least to the best of our knowledge, has appeared twice that we know of. One was back in February of 2011, and then seemingly the same one or the same kind showed up in September of 2012. Again, when you zero in on it, you begin to see a lot of detail. And the real close-up, again, this very shiny steel, mechanical, slick kind of shape begins to, appear. There's another one. I call it. Yeah, go ahead. I'm just running at the mouth here.
No, I just, and then there are the squares that you know, do remind you of the Star Trek Borg stuff.
I know, and you just don't fathom a square or a rectangular box floating out in deep space. It's just not a shape that you would
none
expect
of these,
to see.
I think one of them, especially one of the very, very long ones, does resemble, I forget what the movie was, but there was a science fiction movie about how they had to evacuate Earth, and they had biospheres and everything, and it was a great big long spaceship. I mean, none of these look like Star Trek or any of the rockets we send up. They none of them in any way, shape, or form look like a spaceship. It
no,
almost
they
looks
don't.
Like
they
it,
don't.
You know,
and
it's sort
know,
of
I
like
keep...
was there lint on the lens, you know, but.
There's one that's, I call it the green donut, and it looks like it has a hole in the middle. It looks like a green donut, and it has one of those jaggedy lines that goes from it to the sun. And when Mart zeroed in on that, he, for some reason, chose to zero in on the zigzaggy line, and he blew that up at two different levels. Again, we get back to very mechanical box shapes, and the further he zooms in, the more it looks like this shiny, well-oiled machinery type of a look. There's one that looks like a boat anchor. It just plain looks like a boat anchor.
You know, and these were all around the sun.
Yes, all of these have been caught by this camera, or cameras. There's two of them, and like I said, they click a picture every 12 minutes. If people want to find them for themselves, and they might want to jot this down. There's something. If you go to type in real time images - Soho SOHO / NASA NASA. That's real time images --space Soho / NASA, and Soho is SOHO. And then you can actually see these photos as they come up every 12 minutes. And people who spend time watching those, which I have sometimes done, and sometimes I've gotten lucky and caught pictures that you know, or images that you just wouldn't expect. And then other days you don't see anything. And some days all you see that's dramatic are the solar storms blasting out from the sun.
Yeah. Do you have a theory as to why they've been all of these huge ships are around the sun? I have a theory, so I was wondering if you did.
About what being around the sun? You mean these UFOs?
About why these huge ships are around the sun? Yeah.
The theory that I would tend to lean toward would be that they are somehow getting energy for their ship from the sun. One of the reasons, actually more than one reason, I've already mentioned that there are these zigzaggy lines that go out like from the green UFO, and there's another, the one that looks like a T that has this zigzaggy going out toward the sun. I really think they're tapping into the energy of the sun. There's one that's really quite phenomenal. And let's see, I'm skimming down here. There is one that stayed literally docked with one of these lines to the sun for 80 hours before it disconnected. And
that's my theory as well. I think that these huge ships are able to find suns of some sort, and that they fuel themselves from these suns. You know, if they don't stop at a gas station. Or you know, go to space station and you know, get fuel. I think that the solar energy, something about the solar energy, enables them to power their ships, and they may go galaxy to galaxy, you know, and just when they find a star that is the same as our sun or similar, they're able to draw their energy that way, their fuel that way. I mean, these
That I think is the most viable theory. I've heard theories about people who think that it's a portal, the sun is a portal, and they fly in and out of that. But I don't see evidence of that, especially like this one that was there hooked onto the sun for 80 hours and then it disconnected, you know. So that's not like going into a portal entry, which is one of the other theories that I hear.
Yeah, I would more think that that they are drawn by whatever the sun is putting out. And it would be interesting if there were more sightings during times when there were solar flares or when it was just sort of normal flaring.
I have not seen one where there is a major flare going on. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't be. I mean, these, you know, who's there to check out everything that's snapped with the camera every 12 minutes? I mean, nobody's doing that. So
let's give them some sort of, I mean, you know, you said, you know, about the planet Jupiter, which is huge, so that they are, these ships are bigger than planets, in other
words. Right. I think they're like traveling worlds or traveling cities or, I don't know. They with that kind of size, that would be my inclination.
Yeah, every now and then I kind of wonder if the Earth is a spaceship and we just don't know it. But yeah, I mean, when you see the size of these ships, and I get you have to call them ships, and I'm wondering, you know, we supposedly have a secret space whatever out there, and I'm wondering if in any way, shape, or form we have been connected to them and didn't know it.
Your guess on that is as good as mine. I won't even attempt to offer an alternative. If you have people who really want to find these kind of things for themselves, I'm going to repeat this again. It's realtimeimages-soho/NASA. And SOHO and NASA are all capital letters. Once you get to that, and I just want to explain one other thing. They show pictures of these pictures, you know, little tiny ones. Don't click on those. Click on the line beneath the pictures that are underlined, because then you will get to the multiple sequential pictures. If you just hit the picture itself, then you're just going to see that one static picture enlarged.
Well, it's now, you said that the NASA pictures were fuzzy. Are they fuzzy on purpose, or are they just fuzzy and not well done? In other words, do you think that the NASA is trying to hide the fact that these large ships are out there?
I don't think that they're necessarily using fuzziness to keep information from us, because what has happened many times is that if something really unusual comes up, suddenly that feed of information will stop. And since Mark from the Netherlands was able to, like, essentially eliminate debris and get a clearer picture, I tend to think that they do their censoring more by stopping the feed totally.
Uh-huh.
That's my
theory. So these ships are actually bigger than the Earth.
It would 13 Earths would fit inside of Jupiter. These are bigger than Jupiter.
So it almost feels like they're a world unto themselves.
In a way, it does seem that way, doesn't it? Now, another thing that Mark did for us was he went back in time and got pictures from the various space missions. And so we've got pictures of those, too, and they're just totally puzzling. One from the Gemini 5 mission, which was back in 1965, it kind of has a donut shape, but it's illuminated. And it also looks like it's kind of transparent, like you're kind of seeing inside this donut. Very puzzling. There's another one from the same Gemini mission. I swear to God, it looks like the inside of a light bulb. Like the light bulb part has been broken and you just see the filament inside. It truly looks like that. There's some that are very organic looking. And you just don't have a clue as to what they might be. So he's done some of those for us too. And there's a bit of a mystery with him. He was in touch with us on a regular basis in 2013 and 2014. And when he would, you know, clean up one of these photos, he would let us know about it. We never have had any contact with him since 2014. And he had a YouTube channel that is frozen in time in 2014. Any attempt to reach him through email, which was the way he contacted me, failed to work. So I don't know if he lost interest in the project, if he died or became ill and no longer could do it, or if he was intimidated to quit revealing so much, which is also a very real possibility.
Again, why would terrestrial governments not want us to know about this stuff? Is it I keep going back to that one report where, you know, early on that was done and said if the Americans knew there were really UFOs, there would be too much panic and whatever, they wouldn't be able to handle it. If that mental image is still in the powers that be's heads, while all of us already know they're out there.
At this point in time, that's really kind of an outdated excuse from the government military. At this point, they might be too embarrassed to say that they've been covering it up for so long, might not want to admit to that. There is also, with certain aspects of our government, certain aspects of our military, and involvement with certain ETs, I think that can be a very confusing arena of consideration. I mean, who knows what's going on there, but there is definitely cooperative efforts between aspects of our government and certain ETs. And I'm one of those who doesn't think that all ETs are alike. I think there's good and bad ones and just ordinary ones. So who knows what kind of a tangled mess that could be.
Well, it's you know, I would hope that we can get through our present problem before we have to break that to, you know, humanity that we are not alone. But I think everybody really does know that. It's just a matter of who it is that's out there and where they come from, and do they come from the future? Do they come from other planets? Do they come, you know, where do they come from? And there are many different philosophies on all of it, and you know, some of it could be true or all of it could be true, which would be totally confusing. It would almost be fun to see, you know, the news trying to cover it.
There's a man, his name is Charles Hall. He was with the military. He was stationed out in Nevada someplace in a remote area, and he was a weatherman. Now, a weatherman is one who's keeping track of the conditions so that flights can come in. You know, it's really essential for plane travel. But he was in a remote area and isolated with his job. And he had eventually had contact with a race of ETs called the Tall Whites. He's written about it. I think it's 4 volumes. I've waded through all of it many years ago. I'm so much of an editor, I would have condensed it into 1 volume. But nevertheless, one of the things that stood out in my mind is he said that these Tall Whites had negotiated and had a space or a landing place out in Nevada, and they had permission from our military to use this as almost like a bus stop. It's like they were on tours of the universe, and this is one of the places they would stop, either for the tour or for refueling or both. I don't know. But these Tall Whites, and this I find a little bit humorous, they would try to blend in with our humans. They're tall and skinny, and they don't really look like us. But they would challenge themselves by going to Vegas to see if they could blend in with the crowd. Now, if you're going to be weird, Vegas is probably a place that you can get away with it. And so that's one of the places they would do for their, you know, just to see if they could pull it off, I guess. But he implied that they were like on a bus tour of the universe, and this was one of their stops.
Well, you know, I've often thought that Nazca was a landing field of some sort for them.
The Nazca planes down in South America?
Yeah.
That could very well be.
They literally cut a mountaintop off.
Yeah, at some time, either in the ancient past, I assume, that was created. I mean, and it's like somebody took a butter knife took a knife and went through butter, and it's just as smooth as can be. In every way, it looks like a landing strip. And maybe that's continuing to be used. I don't know.
Well, I know that under some of the lines, not all of them, but under some of them, there is metal of some sort. They haven't dug it up, and I don't know why, but there is definitely metal of some sort there, because their compasses and magnets are attracted to it.
Mm.
So it's another one of those mysteries that we'll never know the answer to, but it's a good one.
It's a good mystery for sure.
My goodness,
and
yeah.
Kind of tying in with this idea of the creatures from other parts of the universe taking tours, I have pictures of what I call a white olive with a blue pit. It really looks like an olive. But what makes it doubly interesting is that we were able to get pictures of it in 2005, 2009, and 2016. Which indicates a recurring trip to this part of the world, or simply, you know, the same kind of vehicle is used by, you know, there's more than one. So I don't know which it is.
That's fascinating. I could see where, jump ahead thousands of years and possibly traveling to primitive planets and taking a look at their cultures would be sort of like an amusement park. Not going down and mingling, but just observing.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I could see that,
and
too.
I mean, we do it. We have found tribes in South America that had no contact with humanity, and basically we did as little as possible to influence them and are really just observing them and their cultures.
Right.
So why wouldn't the same thing be true if we were the primitive and they were the observers? That to me makes more sense than a lot of the other stories that you hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can make sense to me, too. Another thing that your listeners might want to take note of, and this is something that I only learned about rather recently, there is something called the Worldwide Telescope that you can actually connect to with your home computer or with your computer. And I became aware of that by Scott Waring, who's very much into UFOs and has his own YouTube site and actually makes quite a few interesting discoveries. But he used this Worldwide Telescope, and he discovered three very unique objects in a very distant and dim and little known Kalium constellation, which is would be seen from our southern hemisphere. And in November, this past November, he zeroed in on these three objects, and when he zoomed in, the first discovery looks like a satellite dish. I mean, it really looks like a satellite dish, including like the shape that would hold it in place. And in that same thing, when he zoomed in some more, there was a funnel shape. Like a semi-transparent funnel in the sky or in the universe, and some people have guessed that maybe it's a portal because it does look three-dimensional, and then you can see all these little blue dots that are inside of it. And so you have a funnel with a very long tail that kind of disappears into nothingness eventually, but it's a very long tail. And then on the other side of this, what we call a satellite dish, there's this very geometric but broken up shape that's next to it. And again, it has these little blue dots. And you just go, what in the world? You know, it just doesn't fit anything that you or I or most humans have ever even considered. So if people want to do their own research, then check into the World Wide Telescope and then the NASA site that I've already mentioned twice.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, I have them written down. There was also, you mentioned Portal, and there were pictures taken where the CERN telescope is, and it was a blue light that was spiral and went into the sky. Have you seen that picture?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I will try to find it and send it to you. It was right where the CERN telescope is, and apparently they had Haddon on.
Oh, okay. All right. I have seen some of those. We're going back a couple years now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, that to me was a portal. That made sense to me as a portal of some sort,
mm-hmm.
that something was being sent somewhere. Have no idea what or where, but
mm-hmm.
that was a portal. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it.
We keep seeing things we've never seen before. It's quite amazing.
Yes. But, you know, with Project Pegasus and the Philadelphia Project and Project you know, we have all these secret, well, they're not secret anymore if I know about them, but they were secret programs. That the Montauk Project and all of these, now they were working with technology that theoretically was not just ours, but they were working on time travel, and they were working on portals, and they were working on the anti-gravity materials and stuff like this. And this goes way back to, you know, 50s, 40s in there. And it seemed to me that these people are not dumb. They must have figured something out by now. That's you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Well, my working theory
yeah.
is that we should pay more attention to sci-fi movies because they
yes.
have foreshadowed everything that's become our reality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You look at Star Trek as the best example. When it came, is a good example. When
mm-hmm.
you know, when the doors opened before people got there and closed after them, and
right.
at the time it was so cool, but now it everybody just takes it for granted that when you walk up to a door, it's going to open for you,
right?
And you know, the tricorders.
And you think nothing about it.
not a thing.
Right.
I think that you know there are two movies, two science fiction movies that haunt me in a good way. First of all, they were great movies, and second of all, I think they were definitely in many ways sort of like forecasting of things yet to come. One was Interstellar, and the other was Avatar.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And both of them to me we're saying, you know, this is where you're going, you know, if you can just get over yourselves and get on with it. I mean, especially Interstellar, that dealt with string theory and all sorts of amazing things. And Avatar made us the bad guys, which is, you know, kind of cool. And the name of the planet was Pandora, which, of course, goes back to our mythology. And, you know,
Pandora's the Pandora's box.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I totally agree with you. And it seems to me that our movies have always been preparing us, our consciousnesses, for what is coming and going to be, is going to manifest in front of us before we know it. So,
In a positive way, maybe it's deliberately being done as a gentle way of preparing us. If there's, you know, if there's a force behind it that's making things happen, and that might very well be the case.
In Close Encounters of a Third Kind, that was Spielberg, right? I keep forgetting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Who did
what? I think that's right.
All of his little spaceships that zoomed around and everything, every single one of them was created from the observations of somebody that had seen one of these craft at some time or another. He took all of those reports and he created them in his movie. And in many ways, there's one line that has always stayed with me. It's when they were, our people were going to, you know, were loading up into the mothership to go off to other worlds. And the one guy that was, you know, they were sending him, and somebody said, why should he go? And the French guy said, because he was invited. They were invited.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that on many levels, definitely real, authentic sightings in some way work on the consciousness of the people that see them. And when one landed on my campus, it was fascinating, because when it took off and went over my dorm, I mean, I saw it. And I was in a group of lots of people. Now, a lot of the girls were screaming and running and hiding in closets. Some of them just got hysterical. I wasn't the only one that was just standing there looking at it and not feeling threatened, but just fascinated with it. But everybody had a different reaction, and it has nothing to do with intelligence. It has to do with consciousness and what you're willing to accept and embrace and not.
Correct.
And I just felt so strongly that this was, I want to say, almost magical. It turned me on to it turned me on to other worlds. It turned me on to other potentials for, you know, it confirmed the fact that we're not alone. And I think in some ways that it stretched me so that whatever skills or talents that I have today,
they blossomed because of that.
Absolutely. You talked to Lynn Katai. She's the one that photographed all of the Phoenix lights, you know, the Phoenix light shows. And she will, you know, she had the same experience, that it made her more intuitive to be connected to these lights and you know, not getting any real communication, yet knowing there was communication there if she could only get to a place where she could hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
and
that...
And so many things come to us non-verbally with just a sense of knowing.
Absolutely. So
the very first book I did was called Psychics Don't Scare Me Anymore. I did it because I was an editor in a newspaper at that point, and somebody had done a story on a local psychic. At that point, I hadn't given that whole subject much thought. And as I was sitting editing the story, I thought, I'm talking to myself now, or quietly to myself, Mary, if you're so open-minded, you need to check this out for yourself. And so I went and visited, you know, I went and had a session with this psychic. Looking back on it, I was very fortunate that my first experience was with a very competent, genuine psychic, not, you know, anyhow, we'll leave it at that.
Yes.
And from there, my curiosity just opened up like crazy, because she told me things that she couldn't possibly know. And I eventually ended up, when I had a job where I traveled a lot, and I would stop and have sessions with psychics. I think I ended up in 5 states in Canada doing this, and ended up writing this book, Psychics Don't Scare Me Anymore. And I know that's a crazy title, but that was back in the 1980s. So things change.
Well, you know, I think that that's very true, and true psychics, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, this is not carved in stone for anybody else, but in my opinion, the true psychics realize that there is a pathway to follow, and in following that pathway, it takes them deeper inside themselves to understand who they are and to understand the spirit that they carry within. And as they do that searching and that reaching, it expands consciousness that enables them to be more sensitive to themselves. And then once they're more sensitive to themselves, they are more sensitive to other people as well.
Absolutely. And if I look back at turning points in my thinking, meeting that lady back then was a turning point for me, because it really made me open up my mind to many, many possibilities. I mean, things I had not spent time thinking about it. Like I said, that's a long time ago. But had me seriously thinking about past lives, which I had not given a whole lot of thought to. And she told me things that were so peculiar. Like she said, you've had a lot of Oriental lives, and it's not that you crave anything like Oriental food or anything of that nature, but you have certain things that you do that are very Oriental. And she said you print rather than write, which I do and have done all my life. She said that you doodle a lot, and when you do it vertically, which I do. And when I pick up, I've broken my habit on this, but when I pick up magazines, if I don't consciously think about it, I will flip from back to front, which, again, that's the way Oriental books work. So she gave me examples, and then much later than that experience, I had somebody that I'd interviewed for my book who also did hypnosis, and he put me under, which I, you know, was so confident he couldn't do, but of course he did, and I wrote in a form of Chinese. And a bunch of my friends were there, too, for this show. And we took it to a Chinese restaurant, and they took the writing back to somebody, an older guy in the back, and he said it was an ancient form of Chinese. I don't know Chinese.
So you don't know what you said or anything?
I vaguely remember it was something about a temple, which apparently I've spent a great deal of time being in temples in past lives in the Orient. And one of the reasons that I thought that that might be accurate is I was told that I was one who would do communication telepathically between monasteries or between temples or whatever. And when I was under hypnosis, I was told that the reason I like to do that is because I couldn't stand being inside doing all the chanting and stuff all the time. So that gave me an excuse to be outside. Well, that sounds like me to this day.
Yeah.
You know, so you get confirmation in some very strange ways that, you know, don't really seem significant, except that's still part of my personality.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that if you can find a genuine psychic, you're in for a great trip.
And there are genuine ones, even the genuine ones have a very wide range of abilities. And like I said, I was very, very fortunate. The first one I went to was a good one. Of course, if she hadn't been, that exploration of mine probably would not have continued.
Yeah, but it sent you on a journey, and it turned you on to investigating it, to looking into, and look at what you do with your website, which I do when I want to re-mention here. It's called Skyships Over Cashiers. And Mary covers so many topics that I promise you, you can think of a topic and put it in the search engine, and she's probably done an article on it, because you have archives that go back over a decade. And
go back. We started in 2008.
Yeah, well over a decade. And it just, you know, the material there, I want to reiterate for people, you're not looking at something that is just going to be, she's got graphics with everything, and she, you know, the articles aren't, you know, long and drawn out. They make you curious, and that, I think, is the most wonderful part about your website. You give just enough to make somebody curious to have to go looking for more, which is, you know, you give them a nibble, but you don't give them a whole mouthful. So it does force people to. But the first thing to do, if you've nibbled and you found something, put your information into her search engine, because chances are she's written more than one article on it. So you may be able to get more than a nibble out of it.
Well, but, you know, that's the reason that one of the reasons I did my most recent book, which you and I have talked about before, Bigfoot uh-huh. Beyond the Footprints. What I was finding that I had done so many different projects and stories on Bigfoot, and they were sprinkled through a number of years of archives. Well, it uh-huh. wasn't together in one spot, so that was one motivation. And the other motivation, as I've said before to you, is that I got sick and tired of just hearing about Bigfoot footprints and about Bigfoot howls and you know, just those things. And there's just so much more to the Bigfoot. And when I realized that nobody else was really taking that approach, I just wanted to present the more human side to it. So some of these projects that have ended up as books, I didn't start out to do a book. It's like uh-huh. it evolves into a book.
Well, I think the thing that I cried at places in your Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints, because, I mean, it was just, it was so sweet. It was so, and it doesn't mean you're going to go out and look for a Bigfoot to make friends, but you know, I truly believe they're misunderstood, and these idiots that want to go out and shoot one to get the DNA, I think somebody should, you know, take their guns away from them. I mean, if they got attacked, they would probably deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Bigfoot, only ones that I have ever found that had violent reactions from the Bigfoot have been hunters or, you know, people with guns. And if uh-huh. you're going to aim a gun at me, I'm probably not going to be on my best behavior either.
Well, you know, that's true. But they have never, you know, gotten together to attack groups of people to kill them.
Right.
They throw rocks, they throw stones, they disrupt campsites, they make noises, they try to scare you away. They don't try to hurt you.
Right.
Unless it's in self-defense. They will defend themselves, and I can't blame them.
I can't either. So, no, and that book is a little bit like the website, because there's lots of photos. You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's my favorite of the four of yours that I've read, and it's the one that I tell people, you have to read it. You can do it in a day. You have to read it, because it's you're going to just go, aw.
And that's a nice balance to what we keep hearing about the monster.
Yes. But, you know, I just I'm still trying to figure out where they came from. I really think they're interdimensional, and I think that's me. And, you know, they may come down here to spend time on Earth or over here to, this could be recreation for them. This could be their
I want to throw
vacation.
Out another possibility.
Sure.
I think that this planet of ours is a big experiment in so many levels. And
uh-huh.
I think there's been a lot of genetic experiments, and I think that we are probably a genetic manipulation. I think the Bigfoot are. They may not be coming from somewhere else. They may simply be one of the grand experiments. And there's evidence that, you know, in the ancient history, that some of these myths that we hear about, like half horse, half man, half goat, half man, that kind of thing,
uh-huh.
may very well have been genetic games that were played at one point. I think it's an experimental field that we live on.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, one could then jumping off from there, could take a look at Nazca and say that we're also You know, it's cosmic graffiti that's all over the hills.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so wouldn't that be funny? I once said to somebody the reason the Mayan calendar stopped where it did was because they ran out of rock. And if the rock had been bigger, they might have stretched it a little further. So,
absolutely.
Well, you know, sometimes the ridiculous is
true.
The truth. You know, and it's like, you know, you've got to be kidding me. You know, everybody's been trying to analyze this and put it through all sorts of, you know, computer programs and everything else, and they just ran out of rock. It could be. I mean, probably not.
Why not?
But it could be.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think that as we have evolved, we have constantly had senses of humor in every place that we have, you know, inhabited, and every level of consciousness that we've experienced. So, and today, without a sense of humor, you know, you're lost. So it has to have been something that has always been present. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, let's bury a time thing and screw with the heads of people who are going to dig it up in 1,000 years, you know.
Could be.
Wouldn't that
be
funny?
Yeah, we could develop a whole new movie theme here.
We could. it would be funny, you know. Let's just screw with the future and then see.
See what they do with it.
Yeah, I mean, how are they going to work? Yeah, how are they going to work this into their history books?
Not well.
That would be so funny.
We're not doing a good job of that at all.
Well, I think reality is strange enough, so we don't really need to. But it would be fun to screw with the future just a little here and there. We have managed to talk our way through an hour, so I want to re-put out your website, which is
skyships.
Skyships. Oh, I put space. Oh, it's skyships. Yeah.
It's skyshipsovercashiers.com. And cashiers is spelled like a cashier at the store. Skyshipsovercashiers.com.
I knew that. I just put spaceships. I'll fix it before this goes out.
And if people want to, you know, read just a little bit about each of my books, they can just open up Editor's Corner and learn about the books, and all the books are available through Amazon.
Yeah, but, you know, something, start with the Bigfoot one. It's the sweetest book ever, and you will love it, and you'll want to give it to people as a gift.
You're very kind.
It's a spectacular book. And do check out the website. The website you will absolutely get lost in, and please check out the archives there and use the search engine, because it is phenomenal. And you'll sit there with your mouth hanging open, and you'll have lots and lots of questions for Mary. Maybe one time we should advertise it and just do a question and answer with you and let people call
really
in and ask questions.
Really keep me on my toes, huh?
Yeah. Well, I can always BS if you can't remember, so don't worry about
well,
it.
Well, that's really sad. I mean, when you think of 12 years of archives, my brain doesn't always bring up the information I need.
Okay, I have a question. 12 years ago, you obviously weren't thinking the way you're thinking now. What is the biggest change in your philosophy over that 12 years?
See, I knew it was going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
My philosophy, huh?
Yeah.
It's just made me, I'm very, very acutely aware of life beyond our planet. I'm acutely aware of aspects of our government that are working behind the scenes and are doing so much in secret that daily becomes more, you know, I'm much more aware of that than I ever was before. And I guess, I don't know, that's not philosophy, but those are two things that I certainly am much more conscious of than I ever was before.
Yeah, if I went back 20 years or so, I would say that the government aspect of it absolutely is something that has blown my mind. And the other is that I have come to a point where I realize that a spiritual belief becomes a cosmic belief if you give it a chance. And that opens up lots of doors.
Right. I would agree with that. See, you're just much more the philosopher than I am.
Nah, I work with a little different material, but we can still talk. Okay, so thank you so much, Mary, for being here with us yet again. And I look forward to next month when we can pump you for more information.
All right. And thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're one of my favorites. I just love having you on. I could stretch you the 2 hours, but I know you said an hour, and so we're stopping at an hour.
I appreciate that. Thank you. You and your listeners have a good evening.
You too, Mary. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody. Please tune in on Friday. I've got a great show Friday evening, and it will be worth your time dropping in 9 o'clock. And then, of course, next week we start and do it all over again. Have a great evening, everybody. Stay healthy, stay warm, stay dry, and stay curious. Good way to be. Good night now.